This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Georgia's primary elections take place tomorrow, delayed due to the coronavirus pandemic. More than 1 million people have voted already, thanks to a record surge of voting by mail. Chris Acuff is a professor in political science on our campus, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga.
Chris, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow, we have the Georgia primary a little later than originally scheduled for obvious reasons.
Yeah, the COVID pandemic sort of thrown everybody through a loop, including election administrators. So, yeah, it got postponed twice, actually, from the original dates. So last time we talked was leading up to Super Tuesday, and some of those, it seems like several months have passed, even though it hadn't been that many. But so several states are now getting back to the point where they're conducting elections. So we saw a few last week, and then we'll see some this week as well.
And then focusing on the contests, the one that comes to mind is the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate seat.
We have two Senate elections coming up this year. The first will be David Perdue's, the current incumbent seat. But Democrats, particularly John Ossoff, as well as a couple others, are vying to run against him. So whereas the Republican race is uncontested, the Democrats have several candidates. So John Ossoff, who sort of made waves several years ago by overperforming in Georgia's 6th district for a fairly strong Republican district, lost only by a couple points. And so he's been sort of an up-and-comer in Georgia politics. But also former Columbus Mayor Teresa Tomlinson, another candidate, Sarah Riggs Amico, who ran for lieutenant governor a couple of years ago. So I think John Ossoff is probably favored. He's definitely leading in terms of money raised, in terms of money spent on advertising and things like that. So I think he's probably, at least the consensus from the political classes, favorite to win the Democratic nomination. But again, with everything going on in the world and turnouts likely to be different in certain areas depending upon COVID and other things like that, we'll just have to see how it shakes out.
It's a different story for the special election for Georgia's other Senate seat in November and for the other party now holding that seat.
That'll be an open election in November, but you've already sort of seen some waves in that race. The current Senator Kelly Loeffler was appointed and sworn in back in January with Doug Collins, who originally had President Trump's sort of tacit endorsement. You saw Governor Brian Kemp point her to that seat, the former Senator Johnny Isaacson seat. The current senator is going through some tough times, at least in the press, in terms of some of her stock trades and other things like that. But with Representative Collins challenging her, obviously Donald Trump carries a lot of weight within the Republican Party in Georgia and a lot of other fairly conservative states. And so you saw him during the impeachment process before it got to the trial in the Senate, was he was very vocal in support of President Trump. Within the party in Georgia, the Republican Party in Georgia, you'll likely see a lot of people who support Donald Trump probably lend themselves more to Doug Collins versus the incumbent. And so at least early polling in that race shows that she's definitely behind, actually trailing in some cases with a 4, 5, or 6-way head-to-head a couple of the Democratic candidates in that. So what will end up happening in that race is the top two will go on regardless of party. If it's a Doug Collins and Kelly Loeffler, then those two will go on. If it's a Democrat and a Republican, those two will go on. So that will be an interesting race. And so if no one gets 50%, there will be a runoff next January. So we've still got a little while on that race, but considering the dynamics of everything going on politically across the country and here in the South, you'll likely see a lot of developments in that race.
And describe for us the presence of the two major parties in North Georgia within our listening area. For sure, we're talking about a red area.
In North Georgia, I would say there really isn't a presence very much of two parties. If you look at electoral maps and voting patterns, at least in the last few decades, as Republicans have made a lot of inroads, particularly in more rural areas, is essentially everything north of Atlanta up to the Tennessee border is a solidly red area of the country. So if you look at election returns, for instance, from the 2018 gubernatorial election, where you had Stacey Abrams versus Brian Kemp, those counties in North Georgia were voting, 80-85% Republican. Statewide, that's a contrast to areas maybe around Atlanta or some of the other larger cities, Columbus or Augusta or Athens with the University of Georgia. So geographically and demographically, it's reflected in Georgia the same as it is across the country, where people in cities and metropolitan areas tend to lean a little bit more Democratic, or they tend to be more, you know, purple areas, as we call them. That's a good mix of Democrat and Republican areas. But North Georgia, at least again, for the last couple of decades, has been solidly Republican. So at least for the members of Congress running there, and in terms of Senate votes, in terms of the presidential vote, is I wouldn't expect too much to change in the dynamics of North Georgia.
But what might change statewide is which way Georgia falls in the presidential election this time. Is this the time where Georgia may turn blue given the demographic changes in the Atlanta area?
I'll hedge and say it could. A lot of those states, Texas being one, Arizona being one, Georgia being one, obviously are these states where the Democratic Party is looking for changes. And again, if you just look at the geography, big cities are changing that, whether it's Atlanta in Georgia and some of the other metropolitan areas, whether it's big cities in Texas or in Arizona, you see a lot of the changing patterns across the country. We tended to see historically, you know, what we called the Solid South was Democratic control of a lot of the Southeast particularly. And so again, over the last 50 or so years, we've seen a change. But again, Georgia could be one of these states that changes. I would say if I were betting, and I'm not going to, but you know, I would say maybe not yet, but it's certainly trending that way. So again, if you look at early polls, which we're still a ways out from November, but if you look at early polls between the presidential race or the Senate races, is most head-to-head Democratic versus Republican matchups are within a few points of each other. So again, depending on the impact, potential impact of COVID, economic factors of lots of things going on in the country, I mean, all those things could potentially affect turnout in November. Depending on the circumstances, we certainly could see a Georgia or other states that are sort of close in terms of the margins of error in these polls. We could see them flip for sure.
And among the events that could turn things one way or the other, the killing of George Floyd, the case in Brunswick.
With a lot of the, you know, I guess we could call it civil unrest that's happening, and particularly in a lot of cities, particularly amongst the African-American community and communities of color, amongst younger people who want to see change or who are upset at the current status quo, as we could call it, in terms of leadership or the lack thereof in maybe certain cities or states or the country. You see a lot of these movements. And so generally, I mean, obviously within parties and electorally, is these social movements can certainly have an impact. So that'll be an interesting dynamic leading up to maybe August primaries and then the November general election. But certainly those being on the forefront of a lot of people's minds, you know, considering tomorrow's election in Georgia, those things can certainly impact, one, people's sort of mindset, maybe their motivation for going to the polls, but also in terms of turnout. Traditionally, in terms of turnout, obviously young people tend to vote at lower rates compared to older people. And so, for instance, if there are a lot of young people who are fired up about making change, about making waves, making their voices heard at the ballot box, you could certainly see them disrupt the status quo in terms of leadership and maybe in terms of who we expect to turn out in these elections. Again, a lot of these tragic events, and sometimes we call them focusing events in public policy or political science, is, you know, some tragedy happens, some major milestone occurs, and then we can sort of trace back big social movements and social change and electoral outcomes to a lot of those changes. So you could certainly see the killing of George Floyd and some of these other tragic cases certainly shape the electoral landscape going forward.
And not only just one event or one type of event, but a cascade of COVID, right, economic, George Floyd, on and on and on and on and on. That's why there are so many people out there talking about parallels with 1968 or the early 1970s and other eras in our history.
Yeah, it's certainly been, at least for a few of the younger generations, the first time, right, that we've experienced all of these things aligned with each other. So again, you know, people are looking back several decades at some of the turmoil during the civil rights era and a little bit post that during Vietnam. But right, then we have this X factor of this pandemic. And so rarely in our history, and I won't be a historian, but, you know, rarely in our history have we seen, you know, a confluence of so many different sort of nationally impactful events to where all of these things could sort of converge at the same time and potentially impact people's motivation for turning out, even their ability to turn out in a lot of cases. And so, again, a lot of sort of questions going forward into how these are going to impact the election, how campaigns are going to reach out to voters. So, you know, just logistically, you can no longer probably knock on people's doors and have them want to answer. You will see a lot of candidates probably, again, reaching out to younger voters. And we've already seen that with a lot of the protest movements we've seen in cities, as we see a lot of elected officials going out and trying to speak with a lot of younger voters who maybe either haven't been old enough to vote or who have never engaged in the political process before. So again, a lot of these things can certainly make an impact going forward. And then in terms of election administration, are we going to be able to vote by mail? Some states we can. Tennessee recently ruled this past week that, at least for the time being, is people will be allowed to request absentee ballots when they previously may not have been able to. So all of these different factors can definitely have an impact on our elections going forward. And so it'll be interesting to see how candidates and campaigns sort of respond to all these factors.
All right. We'll be watching. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to teach online through videos, Suzanne Doolin knows how to help you. She is teaching a course on making your own videos at thechattery.org tomorrow, starting at 5:30 p.m.
Suzanne, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ray.
How did you get into video?
I got into video production in college. I produced a television show called GTV, which is Creative Television Show. So technically, it was actually a very difficult show to produce. Scripted video is the most difficult type of video to produce. I knew how to edit, set up the mics, run the cameras, set the lights up, do everything. I wanted to go into that professionally, but I saw as a young woman that there were barriers to me. So I ended up going into engineering, because all of that geeky setup of wires really set me up for a career in engineering. I worked at one point with wireless technology, and I also worked with audiovisual technology for the medical field. And eventually, I became an e-learning producer, and I produced a lot of video of ordinary people, people who were not professional performers on camera, training people about what they do.
So then when it comes to this online class at the Chattery, what are some of the things that you're going to share based on all of that experience?
The number one thing that I'm going to be sharing is that the most important part of a video is a strong performance on camera. People have a tendency when they're not familiar with video to want to go out and purchase a new camera, a new microphone. And I can tell you that not only will those things not really make that much of a difference for a new person on video, they will hinder your performance, which is the most important part of the video. So I'm teaching people a very simple setup that they can do with their laptop or with their cell phone and teach them how to get comfortable performing on camera. And then once you do that, and once you see how it works, then you can make a better judgment about, okay, now it's time to upgrade my camera or my microphone, once you learn a little more, just using more simple equipment.
And this is something that a lot of people will find helpful because of the situation we're living with now, COVID-19, and Zoom call after Zoom call after Zoom call.
That is correct. I actually have an online course specifically about getting started with Zoom if there are people who are interested in that. And I can also run that as a course for people because there's a lot of controls with Zoom. And I found when I was teaching people about that, that they really needed to learn all of those video controls that are in Zoom. However, yes, like being able to be present on video is a skill. And most people do not realize how much skill is involved in performing. Like I always joke that people make fun of the Kardashians until they actually get on camera and try to be on and like really perform. It's harder than you think.
How have you had to adjust what you are teaching given what we're living with now?
Well, for myself personally, I got into my business because I'm also, in addition to all this background in engineering and audiovisual production, I also am a longtime yoga teacher. So for me personally, what has adjusted is that I've had to take all of my yoga online, and I've been sought out by a lot of yoga teachers who want to learn how to teach on Zoom. So I developed online courses for yoga teachers to show them, because what they're doing on Zoom is a little more complicated than just sitting at a table and talking. So they need more information. So I've become a big resource for the yoga teachers, and I have been working to put all of my material online. My studio here is set up not only as a yoga studio, but as a video studio. So I am doing more video. Fortunately, I'm all set up for it. I'm also developing more resources for people to learn how to get online with their video. Most people now, they're online, they've figured out Zoom, but now they're trying to figure out how to create membership sites or how to develop courses that are more structured that they can sell.
And as you said before, it begins and ends with a strong performance, but that's not all that you're going to bring to this class.
It's true. The class gives you a five-step process to go through creating a video. The first step is to write a script or plan out what you're going to say on camera. Then the second step is to set up all of your equipment, your lights, your camera, and your microphone. The third is to do your wardrobe, your hair, all of that, because you are the star of the video. The fourth is to learn how to perform on video, which is where I spend a lot of time in that class. And then the fifth step is how to premiere your video. How do you get it up on YouTube or on Facebook so you can share it with people? Because the point of the class is to make a helpful video. If you make the video but you don't share it with people, it's not helping anyone.
What are some things that you have been hearing from people in the past few weeks and in the past few months reaching out to you asking for help?
What was really surprising for me when the whole pandemic hit and people started reaching out for me for help is, of course, everybody, and myself included, felt very stressed out and concerned and worried. And what was surprising to me was that as I was helping all these people to get on camera, how excited they were. And it was a very strange experience for me personally to be going through all the concerns, the personal concerns, and at the same time have so many people in touch with me who were so thrilled. But what I'm finding is that most people have had it on the back of their mind to get involved with video, and now they're getting that push to get out there and try it, and they're finding that it's really exciting.
And if people want to participate in this online class, they can go to thechattery.org. Beyond that, where can people go online to follow you and all that you do?
My business is called Get a Bigger Boat. So my website is those initials, gabb.co. So gabb.co is my website. You can also find me on Facebook. My page is Get a Bigger Boat. And that's the main places that I'm at. If people want to reach out to me by email, it's suzanne@gab.co.
All right. Suzanne, thanks so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Ray.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots. Good afternoon. I'm Richard Winham. We have another session from Quarantunes in Dalton. Woodsongs puts together a series of performances every year, but because of COVID-19 this year, they've all been online every Friday afternoon at 12 noon. Last Friday's featured performer was Jim Pankey. Jim has played banjo with the Hamilton County Ramblers since 2014. He's also been the banjo player for Bluetastic Fangross since 2013 and the Lone Mountain Band since 2000. He also plays guitar and, notably, as you'll hear later, ukulele. From his home in Chatsworth, Georgia, on Quarantunes on Scenic Roots, this is Jim Pankey.
Folks, welcome to Quarantunes at Noon with me, Jim Pankey. I'll sing you a song and I'll tell you a little something. Well, I could sit around making music all day long. As long as I'm making my music, I know I can't do nobody no wrong. So someday maybe I'll come up with a song to make people want to stop their fussing and fighting just long enough to sing along. I believe in music. I Hey, y'all, welcome to Quarantunes. This is part of the 2020 Woodsongs Dalton Concert Series. Let's grab a different instrument here. I've got a variety of things that I do, and y'all are just in for it. Let's do some ukulele music. This tune that I've kind of stumbled onto. This is an oldie. It's from Milton Brown and his musical Brownies. And it's from 1934, and it's called "Take It Slow and Easy." It's not super slow, but it is pretty easy. And if you want to play along, jump right on in, grab an instrument, play with me. All right, here we go. Take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. Take it slow and easy as a man can be. I had a little mama all dressed in red. I called her on the phone and this is what she said. Take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. So y'all got that right. Here we go. Take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. Take it slow and easy, easy as a man can be. Tomcat sitting on a railroad track hollered at the mama cat and she hollered back. Take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. Well, take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. Take it slow and easy, easy as a man can be. I was born in the country where I was raised in town. I smell your biscuits burning, turn you dapper down. Slow and easy if you want to get along with me. Take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. Take it slow and easy, easy as a man can be. The doctor, but I'm the doctor's son. But I can be the doctor until the doctor comes. So take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. Take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. Sing with me. Take it slow and easy, easy as a man can be. Listen here, mama, while I get you told, don't you go messing with my sweet jelly roll. Take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. Take it slow and easy if you want to get along with me. I obviously play the ukulele quite a bit. We have a ukulele club here in Chatsworth, and you're welcome to come. As soon as we start back up post COVID, you're welcome to come. And we play songs just like that, and we play together. So it's a gateway instrument, you know. If you haven't played before, this is a great place to start. So check them out. I mean, you can get into a ukulele for little or no money at all. Let's see. This will be a little musical variety show. A lot of y'all know me. You know I have a banjo affliction. Hey, I think I'm here. You know, they say that you can't have a bluegrass show unless somebody dies, at least in a song. This is one of those songs. Somebody had to die. Y'all may know this one. This is an old tune, based on a true story. Mostly, some of these words are probably mostly just made up, but. All right. Thank you. Okay. Well then, let's see, what can we do here? Well, I got the banjo here, and we're doing old songs. We can do it. We can do another old song. This old Carter family song. And when I was a kid learning, you know, I kind of had old records and stuff that Dad had, and then I would find records in the grocery store back when you could buy a record at the grocery store. And I found this, a couple of old Carter Family albums, or reprints of Carter Family albums, and I learned a bunch of that stuff. So here's one. It's called The Gold Watch and Chain, and I didn't write it on my set list, so I don't have the words, so be prepared for me to make things up. Let's see. Thanks for sticking around and showing up. Thanks mostly for showing up. Listen to Jim play some tunes. Let's see, what should I do here? Oh, let's get out the old red, white, and blue guitar. Here's a song. Let me find it. Where did I stick it? Yeah, I have to work from paper. My memory not what it used to be. There's a rule amongst the bluegrass world. If you're going to play a slow song, you have to tell people. And there's a phrase, and y'all remember this, and I know some of y'all can confirm it. It's like, all right, folks, we're going to slow it down now. And so we're going to slow it down just a little bit, and it's going to be hymn time. should all take off our hats. This is a song from 1932 by Thomas A. Dorsey. Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, and let me stand. I'm tired, I am weak, and I am worn. Through the storm, precious Lord, lead me home. My way grows drear. Precious Lord, linger near. My life is almost gone. Hear my cry, hear my call. My hand, lest I fall, take my hand, precious Lord. See here, what can we do? Let's do another banjo tune. If you would like to learn to play the banjo, you can visit my YouTube channel. You can find me, you just go to YouTube, you type in Jim Pankey. Alrighty here, let's see what we got. All right. So, that is a little instrumental number called the Old Molly Hair. Mm-hmm. I'm warmed up a little bit. It's a weird shift gears to go from guitar and into clown hammer banjo. This is an old favorite of mine. I'll tell you a little story. When I was a little kid, and my parents have 8mm home movies of me imitating Grandpa Jones. So Grandpa Jones has been in my life forever. Always loved his playing and always loved what he did. And I wanted to play like Grandpa Jones, and gosh, I still can't play like Grandpa played. But I met him, and he gave me a little book that he had put together, and said, "Here, take this," and I learned a little out of it, and so I was a teenager then. It's a pretty big impression on me. So we'll do you one of Grandpa's favorites. He played it on guitar, but I'm going to do it on banjo just because, well, that's kind of what I do. Go 8 more miles to Louisville. And thanks again for y'all tuning in. Traveled o'er this country wide, seeking fortune fair. I've been down the two coastlines, I've traveled everywhere. From Portland East to Portland West and back across the line. I'm going down the place that's best, the old hometown of mine. Well, 8 more miles of Louisville will come to my view. 8 more miles on this old road and I'll never more be blue. I knew someday that I'd be back, I knew it from the start. 8 more miles to Louisville, the hometown of my heart. There's bound to be a gal somewhere that you like best of all. Mine's from down in Louisville, she's long and she's tall. But she's the kind that you won't find traveling through the land. I'm on this way this very day to win her heart and hand. 8 more miles in Louisville will come into my view. 8 more miles on this old road and I'll never more be blue. I knew someday that I'd be back, I knew it from the start. 8 more miles in Louisville, the hometown of my heart. Picture in my mind a place we call our home. A humble little hut for two we never more shall roam. A place that's right for that left side upon those bluegrass hills, where it gently flows the Ohio through a town called Louisville. Well, 8 more miles in Louisville will come into my view. 8 more miles on this old road and I'll never more be blue. I knew someday that I'd be back, I knew it from the start. 8 more miles in Louisville, the hometown of my heart. And Grandpa would say, hey y'all, thanks so much for tuning in, for being part of my Quarantunes. I appreciate every one of y'all. I've had a ball. Tom, thanks for asking me to do this. We'll see y'all.
Jim Pankey from Quarantunes this past Friday on Scenic Roots. There will be Quarantunes performances at least through the end of this month, every Friday at 12 noon. This is WUTC. I'm Richard Winham.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Thanks, as always, to our producers, Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, Elena Nurabadi, Connor Brown, and Will Davis. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.